Good morning. I'm going to call this meeting March 24th, 2026 to order. And first order of business, we are going to approve the minutes of March 17th. Vice Chair Davis. Vice Chair Davis moves the approval of the minutes for March 17th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, first on the agenda today is Senate File 856. Is Representative Norris, there he is. Representative Norris, since you are not a member of the committee, I will bring Senate File 856 before the committee. Please proceed to introduce things, and I will then move your DE once you have a chance to talk about it.
Great. Thank you, Chair Nash, members of the committee. It's good to be with you once again. Fraud in any form remains unacceptable, and I remain committed to taking appropriate action to address it here in Minnesota. An independent Office of the Inspector General is one tool we can use to both prevent and investigate fraud. And it's why I've been working now for about a year and a half to create such an office. This is a bipartisan effort that requires diligence and intentionality. I've made it clear that I'm not interested in rushing legislation through simply because of the politics of the moment. What I am interested in is crafting an office that will deliver the results Minnesotans expect from day one. The author's amendment I am bringing forward today is a step in that direction. I want to say up front, I believe there are still critical concerns that need to be resolved with this bill's language before it is ready to be passed by the Minnesota House. I do not see the bill, even after today's author's amendment, as a finished product. However, the author's amendment does represent an important step in the right direction and demonstrates the commitment of my colleagues and me to continue working in good faith with members of both parties to get to a solution we can all support. The author's amendment I'm bringing forward today does several things. First, it addresses the unconstitutional appointment process language in the bill that passed the Senate and brings the appointment process in line with constitutional requirements. Second, it adds to the powers and duties of the OIG to allow it to prevent fraud from occurring in the first place, rather than just investigate it after the fact. Specifically, it allows the OIG to, one, establish standards and best practices concerning the operation, investigations, and fraud prevention processes across the entire state enterprise, along with reviewing performance against these standards. Two, facilitate information sharing between departments and agencies to avoid multiple state agencies being defrauded by the same suspect. And three, evaluate the performance of agency inspectors general and recommend improvements as needed and report on these findings to the legislature. And third, the author's amendment also adopts several other relatively minor or non-controversial language changes that have come about as we've taken a closer look at the version that passed the Senate. I am committed to continuing to work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, including Representative Anderson, as this bill progresses through the future committee stops to resolve the remaining sticking points required for it to pass the House and deliver on our shared goal of fighting fraud in Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Nash.
Thank you, Representative Norris. I will remind you that not only is it bipartisan, and we don't always recognize the other body as being, you know, valuable, but we should recognize that this is both bicameral and bipartisan as well. So the chair will move your DE6 for you to come before the committee. You've described it. Questions? I believe, Representative Joy, you had told me that you have a question to the author's amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You might want to turn your mic on.
It's on.
Okay.
Hopefully. Maybe they disconnected it, though.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. This is, you know, we've kind of played tennis back and forth on this, getting this moving. And some of the questions I have, and I'm glad we're going to continue working on it. You know, usually we've heard many times in this committee, if the bill's not ready for prime time, we don't move it. But this is an important piece of legislation to keep moving. So one of the things I have is in, like, sections 9.1 to 9.23, you know, when you read about the Department of Human Services' primary responsibility to investigate fraud in the Medicaid program, but the Inspector General has authority to conduct independent investigation. And then we drop down to 9.24. It says alert an agency issues to seek court order to freeze funds. If the department or agency does not have primary investigation authority under subdivision 2, the inspector general shall investigate. I think that needs some clarification, because it kind of seems like to me that we could end up in fraud situations there, but then we're going to, well, who is a department over here has primary, and down here it says if they don't have primary, to freeze the funds. And my concern is there is we're going to continue funding fraud, and they can't freeze funds, and then it's just going to get into another piece of legislation we have back at the table to clarify to the agency, like we have in many bills, who has the right authority. So that's one area I have some concern on, Representative Norris. If we could work on that or get some legislation move along, I'd be happy to work with that too. But that's my concern in the bill, so I appreciate
Representative
it.
Norris.
Yeah. Chair Nash and Representative Joy, you raise a good point, and it's one that we as the authors of the bill have spent a lot of time debating and trying to work through with nonpartisan staff. One of the challenges that we have is that there are federal rules that require agencies that are administering Medicaid dollars to be the primary investigators of fraud within programs administered by those agencies. And so what we're trying to do is still adhere to those federal rules, but make sure that those investigations occur in the first place and occur to the standards that we expect. And so what we're trying to do with the language is walk that fine line. I appreciate the feedback, and we can continue to take a hard look at that and make sure we've got it, the language tightened up as appropriately as possible. But you know, that's a little bit of the background on why that language is the way that it is.
Representative Joy.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for your strong commitment to this. I truly appreciate that, and I'm hoping that we can get this amendment put on today. And I want to say thank you in advance to some of my colleagues. I do think the bill is vastly improved. I know the last time around I had expressed extreme concerns about constitutionality. We fixed that in this DE amendment, which was really critical because we don't want to pass something that we can't actually implement in day one. That doesn't make much sense. So I'm really grateful for that. I also really appreciate the prevention measures because I think, quite frankly, I'm less worried about the punitive side on the end. I'm I think it's much more important to prevent it in the first place, right? We can save ourselves a lot of dollars if they do not go to the wrong place in the first place. So I'm really grateful for that. I will say I'm leaning towards voting for this bill today, but I just wanted to say I do have some additional concerns, and I think you outlined some of those, particularly the one about MDE and making sure that we have folks with expertise in that area investigating issues in that area. And of course, with the federal rules, that makes sense. And I think that we want to make sure that continues. There's also, I think, some duplication still in our effort here. And, you know, around here, we've got a lot of pennies to pinch. So I think we do not want to be duplicating efforts and spending potentially millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars where they should not be spent when they could be used elsewhere. And finally, we do still need to make sure that we collectively, as a group, come together on how we're going to fund this bill. And, you know, right now, we are very likely going to be having zero targets, and we do not have any money. So I think while I value this and I really want to see it pass, I do think that those three things still need addressing, and I know there's going to be time to do that, but I just wanted to make sure that we get those on the record. Thank you for your diligence and your hard work.
All right, I didn't hear a question there, Representative Quam. And members, we are going to start moving quickly. We got to get up through the rest
of this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move quickly. Already we have the OLA, which does the reviewing of processes and recommending improvements. Up until a few years ago, all of the federal grant review audits and verification that we're following the federal guidelines and procedures, those were performed by the auditor. A few years ago, it was changed to allow other entities to also do that because of the workload on the auditor. So I don't see why we need most of this in the DE, because we already have the expertise. We already have processes in place to do it. The problem is when the auditor comes across stuff that's a violation, they have no enforcement. So they refer it to other entities. And unfortunately, a few years ago, the only other entity that was interested in investigations were the federal government. And we've seen, what, almost 90 convictions from that referral. So I think this Office of Independent Inspector General should be on the enforcement and et cetera, because we already have all these other functions within the OLA. Thank you.
Representative Norris, you want to respond to that briefly, or should we continue?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nash. Just real briefly to Representative Quam's point, I am aware of a lot of the frustrations that the legislature has about the recommendations of the OLA not always being implemented to our satisfaction. And I think having an entity in the executive branch that is working diligently and is working directly with those state agencies to make sure that those best practices are implemented and adhered to makes a lot of sense and will avoid, hopefully, some of the frustrations we've seen with the OLA.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Representative Joy, you had another question?
Just request a roll call, sir.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. Representative Cleavorn, you're next. I did not see anybody else seeking recognition, so Representative Cleavorn.
That's fine. So for my side, I will just say, since a roll call has been requested, I have agreed to move this bill through to Judiciary to do some of the important work that needs to be done. I'm going to say to the rest of my side, they can feel free to vote their conscience. However, my vote should be enough to get it across the finish line. I agree with you, Representative Quam, that the bill has duplicative work. The OLA and the BCA do good work, and this bill, even with the DE, will duplicate that work. And there are not clear lines. I'm also very concerned that the provision that puts this office above any state law is still present in this DE. I said I would not pass a bill out of this committee that was unconstitutional, so I want to thank you for fixing that. We have no idea how much this bill is going to cost. It is allowing a new law enforcement agency to be established, which has not been truly vetted anywhere. So I'm hoping that in addition to Judiciary, this bill will also have to make a stop to public safety before it gets across the finish line, if that were to occur. I do want to recognize your hard work, Representative Norris. You have been a constant companion on this journey, and I understand your commitment as a lawyer. You know the importance of the law and following the law, and that everyone, no one is above the law. So that needs to really be fixed. I will agree to allow this bill to go out of committee today to Judiciary, where these issues still need to be fixed. I will not commit to a floor vote until these really important issues are fixed. And so I will let it go with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will.
Sorry, Representative Kraft.
You've already spoken, and we're going to move on to a vote. So it is tradition that when the lead or the chair goes.
Can I remind you? You let members speak after me last time. Representative Kraft was late for a dental because he had an appointment, a professional appointment this morning. Please allow him to speak.
Representative Kraft, very briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris. Part of the reason also is the roll call was called very late in the game here. So,
Representative Kraft, any member can ask for a roll call at any time. It doesn't matter whether it's asked at the beginning, middle, or end. It was asked for and it was granted. So please continue.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I wasn't commenting on the efficacy of when it was. Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Representative Norris, thank you for your steadfast work on this, for how much work you've done. I think you're making the bill substantially better, that it at least is constitutional, that we're focusing on prevention. I still have concerns over, you know, that it's right now listed as above the law, and the cost. Look, I think fraud is absolutely, we cannot accept any, and I'm fully on board with that. I've had an issue with this bill from the very beginning because I believe that the money that we're allocating to this can be better spent elsewhere, better spent on system improvements, and I've been from the very beginning. That said, I really appreciate your work. I'm happy that this appears will progress out and continue to work on it, but my concern with this is there's been a rush towards this solution, and I think that there are better ways. You know, we're putting in place a very large new bureaucracy. We don't know how much it's going to cost, and my sense is we would have better results by spending the money in different ways. So I'm a no.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. For my own conclusion, Representative Norris, thank you for working with Representative Anderson, who has been your partner in this, along with Senators Gustafson and Cruen and a large number of other legislators all working on this. And I will say that I was presenting to a group of city council members last night, and they have been watching this. They have been waiting for this. I will say thank you to my team, who has held firm on a lot of the things that had to stay in this bill and have made it so that this bill is going to leave this committee in a better condition than it showed up in. So with that, the chair will renew his motion that Senate File 856, as amended, will move to the judiciary. Roll call has been requested, and this CLA will take the roll.
Chair Nash, real quick. Okay.
Representative Norris, my apologies, briefly.
No, sorry. Did we actually adopt the DE?
Oh, okay. My apologies. It's early and I'm under caffeinated. So the DE6 has been brought before us. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The DE is amended. Your bill has been amended. We will now take the vote on the bill as amended. CLA will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Representative
Bonner, aye.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Clardy.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sexton.
Aye.
There being 13 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed out of committee and moves to judiciary. Next before the committee, we have House File 4482. Representative Hewitt, please come forward. The chair will move your bill before the committee. And we are sending this to the General Register, so the chair moves that this will go to the General Register. When you are ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Nash and Chair Cleavorn and members, it's great to be back in front of the state gov, as it's one of my homes. This is a simple bill that basically allows the society to contract with others for maintenance of our monuments and our other historical sites. I do have them here if there's questions. That's the bill in short.
I'm not sure we need further testimony unless required. Members, questions? This might be a record. Representative Hewitt, closing anything?
Thank you, Chair Nash, for hearing the
chair
bill.
Chair renews his motion to send 4482 to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That was great and fast.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 3672, Representative Quam. Get up some time. Representative Quam, since you are a member of the committee, I will allow you to move your bill to come before the committee, and we are referring this to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 3672 be passed and move to Ways and Means.
Very good. And I understand you have a series of amendments. You have the A2 and the A3. Which one do you want to take up first?
I would do the A3.
Okay. I will. Why don't you move that before the committee since you're a member?
I would move that we adopt the A3 amendment.
Right, please explain your amendment.
Basically, when the original bill was heard, some of the agencies had some issues about duplicacy. And so they sat down with the auditor and the revisor to, you know, take care of those concerns. And the A3 amendment is to satisfy the agencies.
Discussion of the A3. Seeing Chair Cleburne?
I just would encourage adoption.
Thank you. Members, the A3 is before us. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? A3 is adopted. Chair Quam, would you like to move the A2?
I will move the A2 for adoption. However, there, I believe a couple of the members had some queries upon it. So I would move the adoption of the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Quam. The A2 is before us. If you'd like to describe the amendment, then we'll go to member questions.
Basically, it's to fix the referencing of statutes. There was some confusion that came up during a recent audit. And to get rid of that confusion, this amendment was drafted.
Discussion to the A2. Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much. And Representative Quam, you know I've reached out to you already about the A2 amendment. If the A2 amendment were to go on, I would not be willing to send this bill to Ways and Means because it would need a trip to Human Services. The A2 amendment significantly interacts with Section 609.542, which is a Human Services statute, and we would want to know how this amendment would interact. And so I would encourage you to withdraw the A2 at this time or to change the motion to move it to Human Services.
Representative Quam or Auditor Randall, would you like to address that?
With the clarifying with the auditor, I will pull the A2.
The A2 amendment has been withdrawn.
Thank you.
Okay. Member questions to 3672 as amended. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a cost for this?
Representative Quam, do you have a fiscal note?
I do not. The Senate also does not. The part of the A3, part of the A3 was to fix some of the duplicity. But basically, what this is doing is when we do audits, they review the processes and they'll point out they're not following appropriate procedures, they're not doing the right things, and there's a recommendation. They are funded to do the work appropriately and with the appropriate oversight. So therefore, they are already funded to do the job. This is just making sure through legislation that they're actually following the law and due process and standard procedures to do the job appropriately.
Representative Kraft.
So no cost. Sounds
Representative
like.
Representative
Quam. That is why it's going to Ways and Means, because there have been some amendments in the Senate. There's amendments here. And then there would be opportunity for review of the possible costs.
Representative Kraft, follow up.
So fiscal note coming at Ways and Means. Okay, so we're moving stuff out of here without a fiscal note.
Well, Representative Kraft, I'll remind you that that's been done by your side as well. So we're just going to move it to Ways and Means. We're going to let the fiscal note catch up to it. So Chair Cleburne has already agreed to move it out to Ways and Means. So and as amended.
Ms. Chair, I was just merely making a point. That's it. I wasn't saying we shouldn't do it. I'm just.
Very good. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. I do appreciate the work on this bill and the changes you made in the taking out some of the duplicity in the other amendment. I do have some concerns about the A2 still, and I know we've pulled that, so I'm not going to go into that very deeply, but I would like to understand better the implications that that has for the human services and why we're doing it, because that wasn't entirely clear. But I can certainly have that conversation with you offline, because I do still have some concerns about that. And I will just remind us, and I'm not going to belabor it, but I know that the chair does not like what he calls a box of dots, right? That was your thing, Mr. Chair. The candies with the little dots where we have no appropriation. And I think, you know, again, we're going to can talk about this on your side. We're going to talk about this on our side. But anytime we send anything out of this committee with the little dots, that means money that we do not have that we have to figure out how we're going to pay for it. So I just want to underscore that issue, but I appreciate the work that you've done on this bill to make it better.
Further member questions? Chair Cleburne.
Thank you, and I would like to say to you, Representative Quam, thank you for your constant communication with me about this bill. I will echo both Representative Kraft and Representative Bonner's concern that we have no idea what the cost is on this bill. Again, I'm agreeing to move it out of committee. I'm not guaranteeing a vote in Ways and Means depending on the cost. I do want it on the record that I believe it was 11 agencies have not yet responded as to what this will cost. So while we wait for that fiscal note, I'm agreeing to park it in Ways and Means, but that is still very much a concern for me. And depending on what the fiscal note will be, I will advise our side in Ways and Means as to what I think the vote should be. Great. Thank you.
Representative Quam, closing words to 3672 as amended.
In the Senate, this is carried by the chair of the Legislative Audit Commission, and in the House, I am the vice chair of legislative. This is bipartisan, and we have tried to have the work driven by the auditor. And thank you very much for your consideration.
Okay, Representative Quam, thank you. And Auditor Randall, thank you for being here and for the amazing input you've had with us this morning. Appreciate that. So the chair renews his motion to send 3672 as amended to Ways and Means. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is on its way. Next, we have Chair Scott with House File 1234. Chair Scott, since you're not a member of the committee, I will move House File 1234 to come before the committee. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Scott, you have an A4 amendment. I will move the A4 for you. Would you like to discuss your amendment?
Yes. The A4 is an example of a lot more hours of hard work and stakeholder input to get the bill in the shape that the stakeholders can live with. And while it's maybe not exactly what I would have liked to have seen, it is progress, and so I would encourage members' support.
Okay, members, questions to the A4? Seeing none, all in favor of the A4, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the A4 is adopted. So to 1234 as amended, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is known as the Payment Transparency Act, and as a reminder, this bill is important to Minnesota for the construction industry for two reasons. First, it increases payment transparency on public construction projects, and second, when subcontractors are not being paid, this bill gives them the information they need to enforce the Prompt Payment Act, which is current law. House File 1234 has broad bipartisan support in the House and the other body, and 16 trade associations support the bill. Over the past year, House File 1234 brought together private industry and public owners to bring more payment transparency to public construction projects. Our initial stakeholder meeting had 20 to 30 participants, and since our last hearing, more meetings have produced real concessions. Before our last hearing in this committee, the state agencies proposed a new approach to the bill and called it their so-called no-cost option. On that premise, we accepted their approach as the basis for the bill. After this committee passed 1-2-3-4 unanimously, the parties worked hard, compromised, and the amendment before you today reflects the significant work that took place over the last 2 weeks. The new amendment deletes two meaningful provisions in the bill that would have protected a subcontractor's right to submit timely invoices for their work. While it is not being addressed today, many stakeholders have committed to working over the interim, and we look forward to resolving the invoicing issue next session. At this point, no one is getting exactly what they wanted, and as we know around here, sometimes that's the best solution. But the parties have come to a workable solution that brings more transparency to public project payments in Minnesota. Finally, yesterday we received a 25-page fiscal note from 9 agencies. It is based on the prior version of the bill, so the unamended version. The only agency that reported any cost was the Met Council. The other agencies concluded that there's no meaningful cost burden or that they can't absorb the cost. The Met Council should be able to absorb the cost as well, like the other agencies, because they currently have the obligation to provide this information. The bill is amended as amended, just streamlines the process by requiring the Met Council to update their website with contact information and provide the response in 7 days rather than 2 months. If there are questions about the amendment, I also have Attorney Blake Nelson here to answer any questions. And with that, members.
Thank you, Chair Scott. We have had testimony on this bill previously. If members have questions that have arisen since the A4, we may address that, but thank you for the work that you've done on this. This is an important issue. I agree with you that the Met Council should be able to absorb the cost since they're having to provide this anyway. So we'll go to member questions on the bill as amended. I have only Chair Cleborn. And just to clarify this, my motion is to send House File 1234 as amended to Ways and Means. To your question, Chair Cleborn.
I would like to thank you, Chair Scott, for the hard work that you've done to get this bill into a compromise position, and I totally agree with you that it's not where you wanted it to be, but I appreciate your wanting to move it forward and to do the protection for our subcontractors. I originally told Chair Nash that we would not move this bill today until we had that zero fiscal note to from Met Council. But you and I have always worked in a very honest and bipartisan way. So I'm asking my team to allow the bill to go to Ways, and then we will revisit the fiscal note there. So I will be a yes vote on the bill today to allow it to move to Ways.
Thank you, Chair Cleborn. Chair Scott, would you like to conclude?
Thank you, Chair Cleborn, for that. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can clear up anything that any misunderstandings that the Met Council may have as far as this fiscal note goes. I appreciate your willingness to move it on. That's it, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate members' support, and I know your time is valuable, so I'll zip my lip.
Thank you, Chair Scott. The Chair renews his motion to send House File 1234 as amended to Ways and Means. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? You're on your way.
Thank you,
Chair Scott. Okay, we're going to play a little swappity-do here. I'm going to move to the testifiers table.
Chair Nash, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
I would move that House File 4591 come before the committee with a referral to the General Register, or Ways and Means, sorry, Ways and Means.
To your bill.
Okay, members, we've all had ampers in to discuss things before. This is a fairly straightforward bill brought to me with the understanding that ampers is in need of making some adjustments to the realities of funding and for those of you that are not familiar with AMPRS, you really should take the time to get to know it. I will share a very quick anecdote from my experience with AMPRS. As many of you know, I spend pretty much any day that ends in Y on the water fishing, and usually we're up in northern Minnesota pursuing trophy whatevers. On a number of occasions, I have gotten both amber alerts and tornado alerts. Without AMPRS, that doesn't happen. So if you live in outstate Minnesota, those alerts are delivered to you by Ampers, and I think that that is an immeasurably valuable resource that our state can rely on. So if you get those in the outstate, it is an amazing service, and actually I would argue that it helps people who are in danger in both those circumstances. I know that Ampers has been valuable in finding people who are under an Amber Alert faster than they would have otherwise. So, Mr. Chair, I will let my testifier carry the water from here.
Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joel Glazer, and I am the President and CEO of Ampers. And I'd like to thank you for having me today, and I'd like to thank Chair Nash for carrying this bill. Very briefly, because there is a new member to the committee, I will, and because there is often confusion between Ampers and Minnesota Public Radio, just very, very briefly, Ampers is the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. We support 17 community radio stations throughout the state of Minnesota, up as far north as the Canadian border and down as far south as Iowa, and just about everything in between. We are the smaller community radio stations. We are not affiliated, nor do we receive funding from Minnesota Public Radio or Twin Cities Public Television. The stations are all affiliated with either a college, school, or university, a native tribe, or licensed to the community itself. The reason that we're here today is that we did lose all of our federal funding. That was $3.5 million in federal funding. It is devastating to these smaller community radio stations. It is especially devastating to the native stations and to the stations in greater Minnesota. I would love to sit here and say, I need $3.5 million. I realize that's not realistic. So there are a couple of things that we are asking for today that you can do that are actually pretty easy. The first one is that in order to qualify for state funding, currently in statute 129D14, a station has to have two full-time or full-time equivalent. And with those reductions, we have stations that are operating at 1.5 FTE. If we don't get 129D14 changed, not only will they have lost their federal funding, they then also lose their state funding. If they lose their state funding as well, they will most likely go dark. If they go dark, they won't come back. So it is a simple technical change. The committee administrator was kind enough to offer the possibility of going to one FTE. We spoke with Minnesota Public Radio. I also spoke with my board. While we appreciate that offer, we actually feel it's important that the stations have at least 1.5 FTE for a number of reasons, and we feel that dropping it to one would be too low. So we are asking to stay at 1.5 FTE. That extra 0.5 could make a difference. The other reason that we're here is we are asking for $165,000, and that may not seem like it can make a big difference, but it can, and here's why. We are looking to try and consolidate back-end efforts. So all of the stations share responsibilities, and for years we've been looking at ways to try and consolidate that, and it's very challenging because some of them are colleges, and they won't let us touch their back-end. Some of them are tribal. They won't let us touch their back end. However, there is one responsibility that they all share, and it's called a traffic responsibility. So they are responsible for actually scheduling the underwriting messages, the promos, things like that. And each station at a large commercial station, that might be one FTE. At our stations, that's between 0.1 and 0.2 or 0.25 FTE. What we are proposing is that with $165,000, Ampers can hire an FTE to do all of that work for all of the stations, freeing those individuals up to do other work. It will cover the cost of the software itself as well as an FTE, and I've arranged so that we can actually spread that money out over time. Legally, we will be spending it within the 1 year, but there are ways that we are collecting it so that we can, and I explained that in the one sheet. It is in some stations as much as 50% of their operating revenue that they lost. I originally on my one sheet put 40 because I did not want to exaggerate because there were some that were 48. There was a correction on KBFT on the back that it is 50%. With that, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, thank you for our support for 4591. And would ask for all of your support. I thank the fact that I had representatives, many of you from this committee, reach out to me after these cuts and say, we need to do something to make sure that these stations stay on the air. And I'm available if there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Glazer, for your testimony. Is there any members of the public who wish to speak? Seeing none. Chair Nash, before we go to member discussion, do you have anything else to add?
Nope.
Okay, member discussion. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Nash, for bringing this. I'm absolutely supportive, and I would add that, and I've stated it before in this committee, I think having media outlets, local media outlets, is one of the cornerstones of democracy, and I'm very concerned about them going away. So I'm happy to support this to make sure that that these stations don't go dark.
Chair Nash.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I apologize. There's one thing that I left off that I would like to respond to, Representative Kraft. I believe the reason that we get so much support is that I mentioned when I was asked to testify before a congressional committee, I was not surprised that we lost federal funding, and here's why. There are stations around the country that were going far left or far right, mostly far left, to be honest, with public stations. And we feel very, very strongly that if you take a dime of state or federal money, that we should be amplifying all voices. And we take that very, very seriously. And we do amplify all voices. And I believe that is why we get such strong support. So thank you for pointing that out, Representative Kraft.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that point. I want to make sure my comment was not a left or a right comment. It was that I think we need local media outlets, that people need that, regardless of what type of community they are. So I'm very supportive of that, regardless of left, right, center. So I appreciate your focus. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kraft, that's why I'm carrying this bill, because I'm not one to spend money flippantly, and I do recognize, having spent so much time listening to some of these radio stations when I'm around the state, they do a very nice job in trying to keep it between the center line, and they make sure that they are not going too far afield. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Luger Nicolai.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Chair Nash, for bringing this bill forward. I think radio is such an important medium. It's really important to me as someone whose job takes me all over the state, and I listen to the radio and I listen to AMPR stations to know what's happening locally when I'm in a different place. I do think that this reflects something that really makes me grieve for the law, for the federal funding that has been lost, and I am more than willing to put a partisan label on how that happened. It's undeserved. It's cost people jobs. It's in these stations, as I said about the public television bill before, run lean to begin with. It's not as if there was an excess personnel. So I hope that we can find more opportunities for funding in the future to ensure that you aren't running on fumes.
Chair Nash or Mr. Glazer?
Nothing.
We will go to Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you. I just want to say once again, Joel, how much I truly, truly appreciate your work. I know you and I have had long discussions about really trying to go above and beyond to create balanced content across the state. And, you know, as someone who has family across the state, and particularly in greater Minnesota up north, I know how valuable these services are. Like, I don't think we can underscore that enough. And I think the conversation we're having today on a bipartisan basis really reflects that. So I just want to say thank you for all of your hard work. I think I, too, am really dismayed about losing federal funding and what that means for those smaller stations that serve a really critical role, particularly in our more underserved areas around Minnesota. So I will be voting yes for this bill today. I want to thank you for your support and your efforts to be creative in finding ways to work more efficiently. And hopefully we can find a way to help fill in some of the gaps. But I want to just say thank you to Chair Nash for bringing the bill forward, and thank you to you for doing all that hard work across Minnesota.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for your support, or at least what I believe is going to be your support. You know, I will amplify what Mr. Glazer said, that it is unfortunate that other outstate radio stations around the country have lost their nonpartisan moorings, and hopefully that can find a course of correction. So I'm grateful, and with that, I can let Chair Cleavorn conclude for her side.
Just thank you. And Chair Nash, thank you for bringing the bill. I'm really glad that we are able to split the load, and I carried the television, you're carrying the radio, and it's good work all around. So thank you so much.
With that, Chair Nash renews his motion to re-refer House File 4591 to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
There you go.
Carry. Okay, Chair Nash, you have House File 3554. Is that accurate, or are we going with?
Mr. Chair, we can do 3554. It'll be very brief.
Okay, very good.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move 3554 to come before the committee with a referral to the General Register. And, Mr. Chair, House File 3554, I just wanted to give Representative Hollins a shout-out. It was her bill initially. Wanted to make sure she got credit for it. When asked by the supporters, could we get this done quickly, I said we'd be in and out the door in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Members, if you drove last week during the snow, you recognize the value of the people who removed the snow from the roads for us. Minnesota is a snow state, and it's very valuable that we recognize people who do that for us. So 3554 seeks to make January of every month Snow Professional Appreciation Month. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Paulita LaPlante. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm the owner of Prescription Landscape, and I'm here in support of HI 3554. I also want to thank Chair Nash for his work and leadership on this proposal. My family started Prescription in 1980. Since then, we've grown to an operation of a few hundred people during the snow season and employ 150 people year-round in the growing season. For my team, January isn't just another month on the calendar. It's a month of extreme mental and physical exhaustion. While the rest of the world sees winter wonderland, my team sees high-stakes safety. We're the first responders helping the first responders. If we don't clear snow and ice, first responders are put at risk. ER entrances, drives, walkways become hazardous for EMS patients and caregivers. Sacrifice. My employees juggle child care. They work 12-hour shifts. They miss birthdays. They miss hockey games. They miss family nights together to work outside in freezing weather and whiteout conditions. By designating January as a Snow Professionals Appreciation Month, this bill validates the professional status of our industry. It tells my crews that their specialized skills are essential to the state's infrastructure. Recognizing this month provides a platform for education, helping the public understand why we do what we do, and encourage some patience when they see yellow lights flashing on the road. We've seen how other states shut down during heavy snow and ice storms. Not Minnesota. That's solely because of the thousands of snow professionals who work tirelessly. This bill doesn't cost money. It doesn't raise revenue, but the ROI in terms of morale and industry respect is immeasurable. Our industry keeps growing and innovating. We're always looking for more ways to do our work more efficiently and sustainably. Thank you for taking the time to recognize the hardworking Minnesota of the snow and ice industry. Please vote in favor of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. LaPlante. Is there any members of the public who would wish to testify? Okay, Chair Nash, anything to add?
Mr. Chair, I was talking with Chair Cleburne before committee started, and I just wanted to see if Mr. Sullivan could make a minor syntactical change if necessary to make sure that this is not just private snow removal companies, that this also covers the people who drive for city, state, township. And I would argue that on line 1.10, by keeping streets in that, it connotes that we are doing this for the people who might work for MnDOT or the city of Waconia or the city of Pick a Place. But I wanted to see if that is something that we needed to maybe add one word for municipal drivers or whatever, or if the Chair Cleburne would agree with me that line 1.10 actually covers that.
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, I defer to the members if they think streets covers that currently. One addition you could make is on 1.9 before snow professionals, insert private and public, so that would cover all both.
In speaking sign language between Chair Cleburne and myself, if you could make that, and I would move that the adoption of that one minor amendment, if we could then put that to a vote, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Okay. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would move 3554 as amended to be sent to the General Register.
Chair Nash renews his motion to move House File 3554 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Carried. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that on-the-fly move. And Mr. Sullivan, thank you.
So, Chair Nash, to your final bill, I believe, House File 936. Would you like to move that before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've moved that 936 come before the committee. And I have an A2 author's amendment.
And the motion for this is to move to Ways, correct?
Correct.
Okay. To your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the A2 to put it in the form that I put the bill in the form that I would like.
Yep. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Carried. Two-year bill as amended, Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My part will be brief. I have two testifiers that can describe this in greater detail. But if you've been around the Capitol for very long, you recognize that we do a lot of rulemaking around here, and rulemaking comes with consequences. Sometimes those consequences could have been avoided had we spent a little more time on the front end looking at the cost-benefit analysis of rulemaking. We've got dozens, and my testifiers will share, but we have dozens of examples of times where rulemaking allowed for cost overruns because it wasn't fully thought through. Other states have made some significant progress in a simple step before rulemaking happens to make it more efficient. I'm not trying to get rid of rulemaking in this bill. Maybe one day. But in this bill, we are trying to make it so that there is a cost-benefit analysis process that is undertaken before we go to the act of rulemaking. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will allow my testifiers to discuss the bill from there.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Rayanna Lee, and I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. I will be brief because I want to maximize my colleagues' time here, but the way that I talk about cost-benefit analysis is when you were in school and you're taking a math test and your teacher says, I want you to show your work. And so then you have to show your formula and how you arrived at that answer. And this bill simply ensures that when agencies are adopting major regulations, they simply show their work. They show the costs, benefits, and the assumptions behind those decisions. And this matters to Minnesotans. For those of you who are aware, Grassroots is our bread and butter. We knocked over 500,000 doors in the last 2 years on Grassroots accountability and policy. And in 2025 alone, we spoke to more than 100,000 Minnesotans. And one of the questions was, should the state be required to show costs and benefits before adopting new regulations? The answer was north of 80%. Yes. I think that that is a common sense thing to do. And I also want to highlight that this is not a new concept. There was actually an OLA report from, 1993 that highlighted the need for this and that it's the rulemaking process is deficient in that aspect. So I will let my colleague here take it away, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. To the next testifier, state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Graham Owens. I'm a policy fellow with the Americans for Prosperity federally, based out of Virginia. And I'm here in support of HF 936, mainly because my background, for about 15 years, I've done regulatory reform. I'm a regulatory lawyer. I've worked at regulatory agencies in roughly about 10 years as a staffer in Congress. And this bill is just about good governance, right? It's policy neutral. It doesn't say what regulations should be issued, whether they should, you know, whether we're good or bad. But what are good government principles that should be applied through the process? And I want to point to federally, Bill Clinton, in one of his first actions, actually issued Executive Order 12866. That created the major cost-benefit analysis requirement at the federal level, created the Office of Information Regulatory Affairs, which manages it. So this is a bipartisan issue. It's about transparency, uniformity, and making sure that things that the agencies are probably already doing, and I can show they are, that they're doing it in a uniform manner, they're using the same terminology, so the people that are being regulated understand what's happening, how they're balancing benefits and costs, so that they can understand, okay, I'm going to justify this cost to my business, changing my shop floor, changing my farm, whatever it may be, because I can clearly see the benefits of this regulation far outweigh the cost that I'm incurring. And with that, I kind of want to actually point to the opposition letter sent in by the Center for Energy and Environment. I don't know if they have a representative here, but I would love to work with them, because I actually read this as a letter of support, because they talk about the immediate costs, but the building code safety, structural integrity, reducing fire risk, those are the benefit side of the ledger. That's why this is so important, so that we can put together a standard that identifies and clearly states all of these benefits and shows what the costs are and makes that analysis prior to issuing the regulation. It's going to make it a lot easier to stomach and a lot easier for the public to understand. I also understand there's a lot of flexibility here. My understanding of reading this bill is the standards are not yet set. Whether it's the Office of Administrative Hearings or the court, whichever body is ultimately deemed required to create these standards, I encourage you to encourage agencies, you yourselves, to work with that body to develop these in a way that works for Minnesota, that works for the agencies. So there's a lot of flexibility in how these can be done, how stringent they need to be. I point to the Virginia model by keeping it as slimmed down and clear as possible, because you want the public to understand what they're reading. It does them no good if it's this wonky, very difficult legalese document that provides all sorts of benefits that they don't understand, or the benefits or the costs are too strenuous. So simpler the better, but there's a lot of flexibility here to make this work for your state. And there's also a lot of ways that we can do this that are essentially cost negative, cost neutral. Again, I point to what we call the Virginia model, where they created the Office of Regulatory Management there. That office was able to save roughly $1.25 billion in 2 years at zero cost to the state of Virginia. What they did is use emerging technology and four staffers that they already had in the governor's office to identify duplicative regulations, streamline permitting requirements, make sure that two agencies aren't trying to tackle the same problem, that they are able to remove outdated regulations. All of this with four people using emerging technologies and a can-do attitude, essentially saving, and that was just the first two, but that's a 2025 number. So that wasn't even towards the end of the Governor Youngkin's term. So there are ways to do this. I also, as has been said, over time, this will actually save the state of Minnesota money, because the agencies are going to be identifying problems and doing this cross-agency review prior to promulgating the regulations. They're not going to try to backtrack. There's going to be a lot of paperwork requirements saved, a lot of scrambling time saved, because you have a uniform process by which every agency can do what they're already probably doing in some form, and they're going to have a step-by-step guide, the things that they need to hit, and it's going to save you a lot of money in litigation, because at the end of the day, courts look at whether regulations are arbitrary and capricious. And the courts are going to look at this and say, okay, well, they did a very clear study on do the benefits outweigh the costs here. And in imposing this regulation on the public, we can very clearly see this was a well-thought-out process. This was not arbitrary and capricious. This regulation should be upheld. And those are the type of analyses that courts often look at. And when those aren't there, you're much more likely to see these overturned, particularly if in the future, like federally, there's no more deference required. But even without deference, the policy, when federal government agency regulations were ultimately overturned, they're almost always because they skipped a step or they just threw the regulations out willy-nilly. So even if they got deference on their policy decisions, they weren't getting deference on the procedural decisions, and that's where they get tripped up. So by setting forth very clear procedural proceedings through this process and working with the Office of Administrative Hearings, you can make your agencies very well prepared to withstand any court challenges, so you're going to be able to protect against bad regulations and support and protect good regulations. And then finally, as I mentioned, I want to point that agencies are already doing this. I'm not a Minnesota expert. My little brother lives here, so I've been lucky to be a part of this community in some form. He's been here about 10 years. But in a short research last night, I found just in the 50th volume of your state register, four regulations that would have pretty much complied with this. Maybe the terminology is a little different because, as I said, it lacks that uniformity. But four, and that's just last July to today. So I think the agencies are better prepared to handle this than people may want to say. And just like our friends at CEE said, those benefits are going to be included. And they say here, the Minnesota already has rigorous, transparent rulemaking process. Why not make it uniform? Why not create the same terminology so that the things they're doing are being done the same way, consistently across the entire government? So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank you.
Chair Nash?
And Mr. Chair, if we could, in your packet, members, you'll see that this is in your packet. This is not a red state, blue state divide. If you'll look, there's Colorado, California, Michigan, Oregon, and Illinois, not exactly known for their vast conservatism, that they are already doing this. I think that that's a very good indication that this is just sound policy that says if we're going to promulgate rules, we should actually take a little bit of time, tap the brakes, and when the comment was made to have the math teacher show your work, I shuddered a little bit because it brought back memories of my I think fourth grade teacher, Miss Phoenix, saying, "Show your work, Jimmy." Even though I knew what the answer was, I still had to show the work. And no, Representative Luger Nicolai, you may not call me Jimmy. I saw the registry like, no. But members, this is being done in blue states right now. So this is not something that is a vast right-wing conspiracy. This is something that's just good governance. It is something that we can tell the people, the state of Minnesota, that we have gone the extra step to make sure that we're taking a moment to make sure that when we promulgate rules that we are doing it effectively, efficiently, and looking at what is the potential cost benefit before we even publish the rules. So thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have one more person that's signed up to testify. Is a Kylie Lindgren here? Very good. Please make your way in. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Colleen Lindgren. I'm the Senior State Policy Manager for the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we're a nonprofit public interest law firm that represents clients free of charge in constitutional cases where their rights have been violated. And one of the areas that we have had a lot of experience in is dealing with regulatory overreach and other issues that honestly would really have been helped. Our clients would have really been helped in a lot of states if they had had something like this implemented before regulations went into place. And in my job, I get the privilege of working with legislators who proactively want to change their laws. So as a native Minnesotan, I'm really excited to see a reform like this coming through. And Mr. Owens hit a lot of the high points. So in the interest of time, I am going to pare down my comments slightly, but I will say Virginia does serve as a really good model for this, for creating greater transparency and accountability in rulemaking and ensuring that critical cost-benefit analysis and impact on rules that it has on regulated parties, local governments, and other stakeholders, which we all know is important. And again, you're getting a lot of this stuff out of the way up front by implementing this type of cost-benefit analysis. And as a sponsor, and Mr. Chair mentioned, there are at least 10 states that already do this. And then there are more states, including Wisconsin and Iowa, that also have this in some form in other areas of their regulatory review process, whether it's sunset or other things. And so this is not a new concept. It's coast to coast. There are many states looking at this. And there are also several states looking at including this in other types of regulatory reform bills this year, or bolstering their cost-benefit analysis as well. And so I'd like to highlight two, in addition to the cost saving, the ability to save a lot on costs, like Virginia has proven is possible, Another thing that I think is really important about this bill is that is implementing the online engagement and information for the public. That's something that Virginia did as well, and increasing transparency in the rulemaking process is so important. In this bill, it requires that agencies both prepare preliminary and final cost-benefit analyses, which must be published and made accessible, and that they have these analyses have to include projected costs and benefits for all relevant parties, including stakeholders, local governments, state agencies, and they must be conducted using standardized models. And another really great feature, important feature of this bill, is that it requires agencies to notify relevant legislative committees of certain rule adoptions and amendments. So you're enhancing transparency and legislative oversight in ensuring greater engagement with citizens and making sure that you as elected officials, you're the direct representatives of the people, are engaged in process, are engaged in these important and sometimes costly rulemaking processes that have the effect of law on your constituents. And you have agency experts that you're working with, but they are not elected and you are. And so this, I think, is a great way, great practical way to make sure that you all are working together, able to represent your constituents really well. And I'd like to draw your attention to a letter that was submitted in the packet in closing from Patrick McLaughlin at the Hoover Institute. Patrick and I have had the chance to work together many times over the years. And he wrote that a recurring lesson in his research is that regulatory analysis works best when it's early, comparative, transparent, and consequential. And Mr. McLaughlin is a national expert. He has developed a methodology for actually doing meaningful research and quantitative analysis on how regulations, different types of regulations and reforms impact states. He's worked in the U.S. and Canada. And so I would encourage you to take a look at his letter as well. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. With that, we will go to member discussion. Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of concerns, so I'm just going to start at the top. First of all, I am pretty confident that the reason that some of our regulations already reflect cost-benefit analysis is because it was originally in the statute in Chapter 14. And this is language that is struck through on page 4, at lines 4.1 through 4.16. So the SONARs, the statements of need and reasonableness, which we all call SONARs, are supposed to include this analysis already. Additionally, the work that OAH and the work that administrations do is already constrained by the delegation of authority that we give them. So the legislature is really the first point of contact in terms of ensuring that there is a cost-benefit analysis, a reasonable one for any regulation, which may only be promulgated to implement the statutes that we have already adopted. That is the only purpose of a regulation in state law. And so the first line of defense is really us. We should be doing that. And if that's not happening, then I think that raises a different problem about our deliberation process. Additionally, I am also concerned by language at lines 3.8 through 3.9. The agency must report all significant uncertainties. The agency must not express unquantifiable qualitative factors of life in dollar terms. I think herein lies the concern I have about how this would play out in practice, which is that stakeholders on either side of the metric would be asked or counted upon to provide metrics that may be difficult in practice. One issue that is qualitative, but around which we absolutely need to make policy, and there may need to be regulations, is accessibility. Accessibility for a person with a disability provides changes in qualitative factors of life that aren't necessarily expressed in dollars. But of course, it's part of our policy-making metric, and if we delegated it to an agency, it would have to be part of theirs as well. And so I do think we need to proceed with caution, not only because I think this is already happening, so this would be non-unique in debate parlance, but also I'm concerned that we are actually moving us backwards in terms of thinking about ways in which our laws can be implemented that make Minnesotans' lives better but may not have a dollar amount attached to them.
Chair Nash.
But I didn't hear a question, but I heard concerns, and we can talk about that as this proceeds through the process. And I'm happy to work with you, Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Nash. So a question that I have on 115.116. So this says that what is being proposed here is that if this cost-benefit analysis is done and it And I have issues about like how it's done, but if it's done and it doesn't come out where the benefits exceed the cost, then full stop. The rulemaking has to stop, and whatever policy is being done doesn't get put in place. Is that correct?
Chair Nash.
Yes.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Nash. So the problem I have is we in the legislature will often ask an agency to do rulemaking as part of laws that we create, for some portion of it that requires it. And so it feels to me then that what we're doing here is we're ceding our legislative authority to this this process of cost-benefit analysis that we should be doing up front. So I sympathize a lot with what Representative Lugar-Nicolai said, but I have real concerns with saying we're going to give up our legislative authority to unelected officials that are making a cost-benefit analysis that can negate what we've determined to do
Mr. Chair.
The legislature. So.
Chair Nash. Mr. Chair, I would argue, Representative Kraft, that many of the rules that get made right now are already doing what you've just described, that they are not reflecting what we've asked, and they are doing it as an unelected bureaucrat. So it's in part your counter there is already being done. So, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yes, Chair Nash, that seems like a different issue if you're saying they're not doing effective rulemaking. But what we're doing here is we are saying, you know, that they can negate what we're saying. We're giving a carte blanche that says if it comes out cost benefit negative for an analysis that may be flawed, that we've just given that up. So I'm a no.
Chair Nash or Mr. Owens?
Yes, if I may, I respond to both the Representative Lugar-Nicolai and Mr. Kraft there. On two points, one, so from my cursory review of the volumes that I looked through of the state register, the regulations I did find that had these cost benefit analysis were those that had the sonar, but not everyone had it, or whatever, I believe that's what it's called. They're the ones that have it, but not every regulation, I believe, is required to carry that. And that's a kind of the point here of having a uniform requirement across all regulatory actions to ensure that the cost-benefit analysis is done consistently every single time. And I would say this wouldn't be conceding your legislative authority. In fact, this is your opportunity to exercise that, right, to ensure that we are putting those checks, that this body is putting those checks on the regulatory agencies to ensure that they have some requirements and some checks on what they have to do prior to imposing law on the citizens of Minnesota, right? So this was an opportunity to say what should they have to consider and putting that into law so that you're providing that oversight. And if we would certainly support any additional checks to ensure that those cost-benefit analyses are reviewed by the legislature, that they're accurate. But
Chair Nash?
Back to
Representative
you.
Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just more of a comment here. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Chair Nash. To me, it seems like benefits like clean air or clean water are often diffuse, but on lines 1.22 and 1.23 of the bill, it just assumes benefits should be only expressed in terms of dollars, and Representative Lugar-Nicolai kind of spoke to this issue. On the other hand, costs are to regulated parties, so there's something of an imbalance in the bill in my mind. And the bill doesn't allow any exemptions to the full cost-benefit analysis for something like a housekeeping rule. And this, in my mind, creates a lot of extra work for very little benefit. Housekeeping rules often help regulated parties by modernizing reporting or other requirements. And just kind of generally speaking, I find it interesting when the only testifiers in support of a bill are from conservative think tanks, including one who apparently flew in from out of state, and we don't hear from people from the general public. So, you know, I think this bill creates a lot of extra work. I'm not sure that there's a benefit. I ironically would probably like to see a cost-benefit analysis for the work imposed by this bill, and I am not planning on supporting it.
Chair Nash,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, Representative Freiberg, Colorado, California, Michigan, Oregon, Illinois, all blue states, very blue states, California, probably the bluest of all of them, are already doing this. So apparently, some of your concerns may not be shared by them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, 82% of Minnesota support transparency and making state government show cost benefits before passing new regulations. You know, we're debating a bill that I think is checks and balances, and I appreciate that, Chair Nash, for this. This, I mean, does a lot for people. You know, Minnesota overwhelmingly support transparency and accountability at a time of high cost of living. We can't afford bad regulations. This is a common sense bill voters would agree on. And I think this is something we have to do. We're not bringing up, we might have brought conservative people to testify on this, but you just gave examples of states that are doing this that are both sides. It's always a scare tactic why we don't want to change government, because we don't want checks and balances. We don't want transparency. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. You know, we've lost $9 billion. This is a step forward to be able to make sure we have checks and balances in Minnesota. I appreciate it, and I ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. We will have a roll call. Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank our Vice Chair and Chair Nash. I'm going to be candid with you. I'm struggling with this one, and I'm going to just briefly say why. On the one hand, I think there's real benefit in having transparency, and I really like that about this particular bill. And one of the things that we see in a lot of other states that we don't see in Minnesota is often there's usually I've seen a lot of states where they have sort of this introductory paragraph that talks about the legislative intent, and it often speaks to the very things we're talking about, sort of what are the benefits or the costs of, or, you know, the specific proposal. So it actually kind of gets into that, and that's something that Minnesota doesn't really do, at least not in statute. So I think that's one that I like, and I appreciate the idea of uniformity as well and making sure that we're consistent across the board. Here's where I'm struggling, is I do think that in many respects, we do this actually. In our discourse, in our discussion, we often do this. I know many of our agencies do this. I know Minute, I think, does a really great job a lot of times of doing some of this and sort of weighing out, you know, what are the benefits and is this something we can bring forward, especially when dollars are tight? They have to make that justification, because if they can't, it's not going to go anywhere, right? So I think that's a problem. And so I do worry a little bit about that. And I also am struggling a little bit with this concept of assigning a dollar value to a benefit. And I think that's the part that I'm most struggling with, because there are some things where I don't know how you put a dollar benefit to accessibility for people with disabilities. I don't know how you assign a dollar value to clean water or clean air. You know, if you're in Greater Minnesota, for example, and you're worried about whether something's going to pollute your groundwater tables, a lot of those folks use wells. If you're using a well, what is the value of being able to have clean water to drink? I don't know that you can quantify that in dollars and cents, but I think anybody in Greater Minnesota would agree that I want clean well water, because that's what my family's going to drink. That's what they're going to bathe in. I mean, like, so I think, I suspect our side of the aisle is struggling a little bit with some of that, how we quantify what that benefit is, and I think that's where we're struggling. So I'm just going to say I like the concept of this bill. I like the uniformity. I like the transparency of it. I think that's great. But I do still have some reservations about some of that, how we calculate benefit based on a dollar amount, that I'm not entirely sure we've overcome. So, but I do want to thank Chair Nash for this, because I actually do think that transparency is a good idea.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bonner, sign on. We can move this to Ways and Means. We can work together to improve the bill to where you'll be more enthusiastic. But my testifier did have an answer to the quantitative values of things that have been mentioned.
Yeah, as I mentioned in my testimony, you know, the standards, the exact standards to be used have not been set. Those will be established by either the Office of Administrative Hearings or the Court of Administrative Hearings if another amendment is adopted. Minnesota is a very generous health care program. How much is spent, you know, each year, for example, protecting people who are injured on the job or helping people make sure people, how much is spent cleaning up the lakes? These are things that if there's a regulation that would be able to prevent that from happening, that you can solve the problem up front, all of that money you save from no longer having to pay out these workers to protecting people on the job, to protecting public safety, if you aren't protecting disabilities, you're in violation of the American Disability Act. There are going to be fines for that. So there are a lot of costs that the state is already paying to solve these problems. And if an agency has a solution that can address those health safety risk problems up front, by preventing them, which is what regulations often are meant to do, to prevent injuries on the job, to prevent consumers from buying products that harm them at home. So the amount of money that is being spent when we don't have those to provide health care, to provide safety, to clean up our waters, to prevent that pollution, I mean, there are ways to calculate that because the state, I'm sure, is spending a ton of money having to clean up because they're, you know, maybe there are not certain regulations and things in place that prevent that pollution up front. So I'm not saying it's perfect, but I do believe that there are opportunities when establishing those standards to kind of work through those, and maybe not everything, and that perhaps there's an opportunity for amendment. I would leave that to Chair Nash. But I would also encourage this body to look, you know, this can start as a pilot program. You can look at it for, you know, 5-10 years or so, see if it's working, see if those benefits are being cut out, and if they are, then, you know, this body could vote to not approve it again. But you know, taking the opportunity to provide that transparency, I believe the cost would ultimately be substantial, and also, you know, those benefits that people will continue to be protected. Because again, this is about no regulation; it's about smart regulation.
A warm welcome back to Representative Jones. Go ahead.
Thank you, Vice Chair Davis. Thank you, Chair Nash, for bringing this forward. I have a question about how this impacts innovation. And especially scaling of technology. So just, you know, thinking about various scenarios, and I know we don't regulate vehicles at the state level the way that the feds do, but I was thinking about like catalytic converters, right? At one point, we decided that we needed to put catalytic converters into vehicles in order to improve the air quality. Sure, at the very beginning, that cost a lot of money. Over time, and there was innovation in order to develop that, and over time, those costs came down. So how would you incorporate a scenario like that with this bill?
Chair Nash. Mr. Owens.
Would you mind repeating? Sorry, I'm not sure I quite understood.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. And so the piece that I'm getting at is, when we're establishing some type of regulation, a lot of times, so that's new, right? And so we're having to spend a lot of time and effort and resources in companies or staff are trying to figure out, like, what is the solution to address a problem? Over time, once we've figured out that solution, being able to implement that solution gets easier, and so it becomes more cost effective. It becomes cheaper. So how do you address that type of scenario with this legislation?
Mr. Owens.
Well, I would put this, it's not directly here. I would love to see it in here. We call it sunsetting, retrospective review, periodic review. I think it's an incredibly important piece. There are some programs federally in other states. In fact, Colorado's had some sort of review since like the 70s, and there's roughly about 30 some states. But basically, you require agencies every 5, 10, however many years to look back on the regulations they promulgated to say, what are the costs now? Were our estimates correct? Are we actually solving the problem we set out to solve? Is the problem solved? Has emerging technology taken the problem we set out to solve away or made it more efficiently, you know, made it so that we're able to address it more efficiently so that we no longer need the specific rules that we set out? I think that's a great plan. I would think that would be a great amendment here to make sure that the costs that we anticipated, you know, they very likely could have changed, and that cost-benefit analysis could be quite different 5-10 years from now, and so it's important to look back.
Representative Jones, follow-up. Yeah,
if I may, Co-Chair Davis, thank you. So I guess my concern is if that solution is not allowed to move forward in the first place because it is not seen as the benefits don't outweigh the costs at the beginning. So if we can't implement that, we will never see the scaling, and so then we will never see the efficiencies down the road.
Chair Nash, Mr. Rollins.
My apologies.
Mr. Rollins.
I don't have a specific example on that, but just because the regulatory program wasn't started doesn't mean that those technologies are not going to continue to grow, that we're not going to become more efficient. I would encourage agencies to say, wow, that's a good idea. The cost-benefit analysis said that today this isn't ready, but 5 years, let's look back at this and see if technology or whatever has become more efficient makes this program work. So that doesn't, for all of us who ever spent a day working in a legislature, small victories matter because you hope that we're going to take that back up when the time is right, so that the effort done by the regulatory agency to look into that program is brought back up when that time is right, so that all the research, it's not that it's not going to happen that day, but they can go back and do another cost-benefit analysis and say, okay, now we're ready to implement this type of program, or to, perhaps switch that program, draft the regulation in a way that says, well, we're going to look at it again in 5 years, and perhaps we can change it a little bit then if it's more efficient to do so.
Quick follow-up, Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Davis, or Vice Chair Davis, and Mr. Owen. I'm just not totally sold on that. I think we've seen a multitude of regulations that have pushed industry much faster than they otherwise would have. I can think of in energy, that's certainly the case with heat pumps, whereas we don't necessarily have really hardcore regulations around air source heat pumps. There are in other states, and that has caused the industry to grow. And so I'm very concerned that things like this could actually hamper our ability to realize those full benefits. I mean, they may be more costly at the beginning, but that more efficiency down the road. So I'll be a no on this. Thank you.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you. And again, I just love the State Gov Committee. People ask why I like this committee, but we always have a great, robust conversation. Representative Joy, I just want to remind everybody that the statement was made that this is a transparency bill. I think everybody in this room agrees that transparency and sunlight is a really awesome thing. And so I appreciate your commitment to that, and Chair Nash, your commitment to transparency as well. The problem that I have with this legislation is the same problem I had with a bill that I was asked to carry. It appears to me that this is model legislation from a think tank that wants a bill to move forward without really doing the analysis of what we already have in Minnesota. The states that you mentioned previously, I don't know if they use sonar. I don't know what they do, and I don't really care because I know what we do in Minnesota. And to our conversation, Chair Nash, that you know that I already had a concern with the bill before the testimony, because not everything that government does has that initial positive cost-benefit relationship. We often have to do things that cost more money than we would want, right? Oh, I can't say that we would want, that the cost-benefit analysis would say is bad. And disability services is something I wholly support, would maybe be one of those things. Accessibility, right? It costs a lot of money to put in a doorway in a city hall in greater Minnesota that, for example, one person would use, but it's the right thing to do, right? And regulation is the same in my mind. So this is not a bill that I am willing to support today. I appreciate the fact that it was brought forward, but it's not a bill that I would want to move out of committee, and I would ask our members to vote against this bill since a roll call has been requested. I do believe it is a bill looking for a solution that we already have, and it is duplicative and therefore not hitting the cost-benefit ratio. Our regulations already have to go through sonar. It's not just some of them. And so, members, I ask for a no vote on our side of the aisle.
And Chair Nash, before we go to your closing comments, I would just like to thank you for this bill and Mr. Owens for your testimony, not just your testimony, but your conservative think tank, because at a time where we just wasted an $18 billion surplus, raised taxes by $10 billion, $10 billion. And then we've seen billions of dollars worth of fraud going through this state. And your survey shows what Minnesota wants. You guys door knocked a ton of doors. Minnesotans want fiscal responsibility right now. And so I would think at this time, fiscal responsibility, conservative policies is exactly what Minnesota needs. So I thank you for coming and testifying with us today. And to that, Chair Nash, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, members, I spent a lot of time with my wife, the industrial engineer, who talked about process drives improvement. And I believe that this would be under that idiom of process drives improvement, that the more we can layer on top of this, uniformity is a great first step for that process improvement. So with that, I would renew my motion that House File 936, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means.
With that, Chair Nash renews his motion that House File 936, as amended, be moved to Ways and Means. So the CA will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn.
No.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Abstain.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Luger-Nicolai.
No.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Sexton.
Yes. There being 7 ayes, 6 nays, 1 abstain, the bill does not pass. And with that, members, we are adjourned.